This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
As dawn creeps through the air above, the ever blue sky fades to a luscious hue, giving us one final goodbye before the takeover of the vast abyss to come. This abyss fills the air above, drowning all in its shroud of darkness. However, through this empty, hollow void, light emerges. Light, shunned by the many dead and dying throughout the galaxy. Unsavable, unreachable. For this light has travelled long before we may have even roamed the Earth and claimed it as our home. These bodies of light, forever far, shine bright on us all, as these are burning stars. A resource so plentiful, it can outnumber the red grains of sand. However, it's so far apart. These stars, they star a cloud of gas and dust, mainly hydrogen and helium gas, called a nebula, which, over hundreds of years, collapses and compresses under its gravity, pulling in more dust and gas using its gravity, and therefore increasing its gravity more, repeating the process while getting ever hotter during the process due to the compression of the dust and gas. This is called accretion, and happens as the core of the cloud heats up, becoming a protostar, which is also known as a star yet to undergo nuclear fusion. Nuclear fusion is a little like what happens in a nuclear reactor, however, it involves hydrogen nuclei combining together rather than uranium nuclei splitting apart. This protostar then slowly compresses under its gravity, increasing in temperature as it does. However, it also gains more mass and expands at the same time from the surrounding dust and gases, increasing the gravity that draws it in. This compression of the protostar causes its temperature to increase, as the more condensed molecules mean that more collisions occur, generating more heat energy. Once the protostar has consumed all of the dust and gas surrounding it, which makes it seem a little greedy if you ask me, it will continue to compress, becoming smaller until it reaches a core temperature of 10 million degrees Kelvin, which also is approximately 10 million degrees Celsius. Or, if you want in even simpler terms, really, really hot. Once the protostar reaches this temperature, it will begin to undergo nuclear fusion and become a main sequence star, or a proper star, if you may call it that, as the hydrogen molecules combine to form helium molecules, releasing large quantities of energy. This release of energy creates an outward force which counteracts the star's gravitational force, leaving it in a stable state, which is the state our sun's actually currently in. This state can then continue for billions of years, with the time frame depending on the size of the star. Once this time frame ends, it indicates that the star has run out of hydrogen, and therefore nuclear fusion stops. This causes the star to begin to compress again, as there is now no force to oppose its gravity, which causes the star's temperature to increase as it gets smaller and more compressed. This process continues until the star gets small and compressed enough to where the temperature of the star reignites the nuclear fusion process, but this time it combines helium molecules to form every molecule up to iron on the periodic table. However, no molecule larger than iron can be formed, as it requires more energy than what can be created through the nuclear fusion of the helium, also known as an endothermic reaction. This process also causes the star to expand, as the outward force of the helium nuclear fusion creates a much larger force than that of the star's inward gravitational force. However, the amount that a star expands is also dependent on how big the star initially was, with small to medium stars expanding to form red giants and really big stars forming red supergiants, which both complete the rest of their life cycle in different ways. Kind of like when you finish college and your friend group breaks off to pursue different goals. Now, let's take a look at red giants first. After a short time from its formation, a red giant will become unstable, expelling its outer layers and leaving behind a small, hot, dense, and solid core called a white dwarf, which undergoes zero nuclear fusion and gives off a lot of light, making it appear white. However, Due to undergoing no nuclear fusion and being solid, it does not generate more heat, slowly becoming colder and darker as it begins to emit less light due to the lowering amounts of heat energy. This causes the white dwarf to eventually emit all of its energy, losing all of its heat and light, becoming a black dwarf, and cooling down to eventually reach absolute zero, which is 0 degrees Kelvin, where it enters a minimal energy state and slowly fades away due to quantum tunneling and Hawking radiation. Or else, a black dwarf could also compress under its own gravity to the point where it forces the atomic nuclei to fuse, even at low temperatures, due to quantum tunneling. This would cause the oxygen and carbon in the black dwarf to fuse into nickel and iron over extremely long time frames. In some cases, this can also lead to a black dwarf supernova, but that is an extremely rare event where the black dwarf's core collapses and explodes as it passes the limit for a stable white dwarf, which is due to the higher nickel and iron content increasing the dwarf's mass. However, although this could be possible, if the theorized proton decay in black dwarfs does occur, the star will decay and evaporate well before a supernova event could ever take place. Talking of supernovas and their products, why don't we get into the fate of red supergiants? Red supergiants are the product of a really big main sequence star undergoing helium nuclear fusion. These stars actually go under more nuclear fusion and go through several cycles of expansion and contraction as they run out of materials to undergo nuclear fusion with, as they all eventually fuse into heavier elements which cannot undergo nuclear fusion, as the star cannot generate enough energy from its compression to ignite the heavier metal's nuclear fusion process, or the process is once again endothermic, meaning it does not generate enough energy to counteract the use. This results in the star collapsing in on itself due to its gravity and exploding into a supernova. However, very rarely, a failed supernova can also occur, where the star collapses under its own gravity, but the supernova explosion is somehow suppressed, and the star implodes, with the core collapsing directly into a black hole. As you may now have realized, the end of the main life cycle of these stars both share the possible end of a supernova explosion, with others also experiencing other deaths and transformations. These supernovae, however, are not the end of that star's life, as supernovae can have varying results and products. Also, unlike stars, supernovae can generate enough energy to form elements which are heavier than iron and eject them across the universe in their explosion, resulting in them being a major source of these elements. However, not the only source. Aside from a supernova's explosion, they can also result in a multitude of possibilities for the outcome of the star and its life cycle. The first possibility of a supernova is that the supernova will completely destroy the star, leaving no remnants. These events are most common in supermassive stars and type Ia in supernovae, as they need immense amounts of energy. In most massive stars between 130 and 250 solar masses, the core produces so much energy and energetic gamma radiation that it generates antimatter in its core, which obliterates the dense core that most collapsing stars have, causing the massive star to explode so quickly and with so much energy that it completely overcomes the gravitational force pulling it inwards. A few moments later, a massive supernova occurs, leaving no remnant of the previous star, only expanding waves of energy and particles sent out from the explosion. Kind of like when you leave food with your good friend, and while you go to the bathroom, you come back to find it gone. Then, in a type Ia supernovae, a white dwarf and its companion star orbit each other in a binary star system, with the white dwarf accreting matter from its companion star until it reaches critical mass, which is also known as the Chandrasekhar limit. which is 1.4 solar masses, or 1.4 times the mass of our sun. This causes the white dwarf to become unstable, leading to a runaway thermonuclear explosion that leaves no remnant core from the supernova, ultimately destroying the white dwarf completely. The second possible, and one of the two most common outcomes of a supernova, is the creation of a neutron star, one of the densest things in the universe. This happens if the initial star was very big, but not too massive. As if the star was too big before the supernova, its gravity would be too great to form a neutron star. A neutron star, however, forms when a very big star collapses in on itself after it's unable to undergo any more nuclear fusion reactions, and therefore cannot counteract its own gravitational pull inwards. This compresses the star until it reaches a point where the molecules in the star's typically iron core are so tightly compressed together that they can counteract the gravitational force on the core of the star, resulting in an incredibly small but extraordinarily dense star forming in the center of the supernova explosion, which pushes away the remnants of the star's old outer layers. This type of star is called a neutron star, because the atoms in the core as the star is collapsing are pushed so incredibly close together that the electrons and protons begin to combine into neutrons, with this being more and more prominent the closer the center of the neutron star you look, with the inner layer of the neutron star being comprised of mostly neutrons which have been pressed so hard together that they form an incredibly dense and unbreakable solid around the star's molten or liquid core. Scientists call this nuclear pasta, which is referred to as the strongest material in the universe. These neutron stars then live on for potentially billions or even trillions of years until an external force shortens its lifespan, with some neutron stars orbiting another neutron star all by themselves. A little lonely though. Another possibility for the outcome of a supernova is the formation of a black hole. These form during the supernova of a massive star, as once nuclear fusion in a star gets to the point where too much iron is present, the star's gravity overpowers the force from the nuclear fusion, resulting in the star being compressed under the gravitational force. This is done with so much force that the core cannot repel against it, unlike in the formation of a neutron star, which causes the core of the star to collapse and form into a singularity point of a theorized infinite density, while the rest of the star is either scattered into space or absorbed by the black hole itself. An event horizon is also formed around the singularity point, with the distance of the event horizon from it being proportional to the mass of the black hole. This event horizon shows the point at which even light cannot escape the gravitational pull of the singularity, and is the reason for the black coloration of the black hole, as no light is emitted from that point or closer to the singularity, and therefore it appears black. Black holes vary in size like all other stellar bodies, with stellar black holes being the smallest common form of black holes. However, smaller black holes are thought to exist, which are called primordial black holes. These primordial black holes are suspected to have formed in the very early universe under very different conditions from those currently, and they can be much smaller than today's black holes, with some even theorized to possibly be microscopic. However, these primordial black holes are only theorized to exist, with only three sizes of black holes being visible or highly proposed today. These are stellar, intermediate mass, and supermassive black holes. Stellar black holes are the most common of these black holes, and are formed by the collapse of a massive star, typically weighing around 5 to 10 solar masses, with one stellar mass being the mass of our sun. These stellar black holes are also most easily observable in binary systems, where a stellar black hole and a star orbit each other, with the black hole being easily visible as it is transferring matter from its companion star, creating accretion disks around the black hole, as well as absorbing some of the matter. These disks heat up as they spin, and the black hole accretes more matter, producing light and making the system, as well as the black hole, more observable. Intermediate mass black holes are a type of black hole that isn't fully proven to exist currently, however, are heavily speculated to by scientists. They would also help to explain the massive gap in mass between the two confirmed invisible types of black holes, stellar and supermassive. As a stellar black hole is generally between 5 to 100 solar mass units, which is 5 to 100 times the mass of our sun, while a supermassive black hole can have a mass ranging from millions to billions of solar masses. There are multiple theories for what intermediate mass black holes could do, with one popular theory being that they form in dense star clusters and merge over the years to form supermassive black holes of today. Speaking of supermassive black holes, why not talk about them? Supermassive black holes are incredibly huge black holes which have a mass of between a few million to a couple of billion solar masses, and use their immense gravitational power to control part of their galaxy's evolution through the inhibition of star formation and other factors. While the exact original formation of these black holes is still unknown, it is agreed that they grow through the accretion of matter and absorption of other black holes, with their consumption and growth over billions of years resulting in their massive side. In essence, supermassive black holes are not just cosmically oversized vacuum cleaners, they are actually active participants in the life of galaxies, which cause many phenomena throughout them. These black holes, however, can still die, even if it may not seem like it due to their ability to absorb and grow from the consumption of matter or each other. But they're all destined to eventually die, alongside everything else, with black holes being destined to succumb to their slow evaporation and death due to Hawking radiation, with supermassive black holes obviously taking the longest to die. With the biggest black holes we know about potentially taking up to a Google years to evaporate, which has 100 zeros on it. So a 1 with 100 zeros behind it. Crazy. This means that the last black hole will radiate away well after anyone would be alive to even witness it. Now, those may sound crazy, but there were also more theorized stellar bodies, similar to black holes, that could originate from supernovas or in other ways. The first of these theorized anomalies that could inhabit space is gravistars, the almost evil twin of black holes. These gravistars are formed similar to black holes, with the core of a massive star being crushed under the star's gravity, but instead of being compressed and condensed into an infinitely dense singularity, the core of the star is sort of ground down under the gravity so hard that the atoms and particles of the core transform into pure energy. This pure energy then violently wants to expand and grow, crashing into the collapsing star around it within a fraction of a second of its creation. The titanic mass of the star collapsing under its own gravity then meets the incredible violence of the expanding pure energy, an unstoppable force meaning an immovable object. This forms a new type of material that is on the edge of what is physically possible, with this material being the embodiment of the phrase stuck between a rock and a hard place. These forces then stabilize, and thus a gravistar is formed, with varying masses like a black hole. Although normally they range from the size of 10 suns to the size of a large city, this almost impossible material that comprises the shell of the gravistar is dark and the coldest thing in the universe, being just a billionth of a degree above absolute zero, with absolute zero being 0 degrees Kelvin, or -273 degrees Celsius. It is 273 degrees lower than when ice forms in water. And liquid nitrogen, one of the coldest liquids that most people know about, being only -193.8 degrees Celsius, meaning that it is super cold. It reaches this temperature because the shell is not made of atoms, but it's rather made of a new and extreme form of matter, which isn't even named yet. and this shell is so incredibly thin that atoms next to it seem gigantic. But despite being this thin, the shell is extremely strong and tight due to the extreme conditions it was created in. These gravistars, unlike black holes, which have a singularity and pieces of matter in them, a gravistar's shell houses a perfect vacuum that is so dense that a gravistar cannot physically have any denser of a vacuum in it. While it's according to physics. But, you know, things like this try either break them. However, these gravistars behave similar to black holes and look very similar, with the only difference being how a black hole has an event horizon and a singularity, while a gravistar has its shell and a perfect vacuum on the inside. These differences can only be seen, however, when two of them collide, as two black holes colliding emit different waves and energies than two gravistars colliding. Another theoretical possibility is a white hole, the opposite of a black hole, which you also call a black hole's neglected twin. As while black hole pulls in things with its immense gravitational force, white holes do the opposite, pushing things away with immense force. This immense force creates the opposite effect of a black hole's event horizon, which is known as the point of no return, as nothing can escape after passing the event horizon of a black hole, not even light. In a white hole, this is the opposite, with its event horizon being a point of no emission, as the immense force inside the white hole doesn't allow anything to enter the white hole, and anything that gets close to entering it or is already inside of its event horizon is spat back out quickly, never able to enter the event horizon. Although some of the theoretical properties of a white hole have been agreed on by physicists, there's no agreed upon way that they would have formed, with many theories up for debate as well as many theories about the lifespan of these white holes. As while matter inside a black hole can enter from the outside and affect its singularity, it cannot escape and affect the outside. This is, however, the opposite for a white hole, where matter inside the white hole can leave the white hole and affect the outside environment, with nothing being able to enter the white hole and affect it. This results in the possibility that the white holes could be very short-lived, as they cannot be fueled from anything external. This finishes off the theoretical possibilities, what could occur from a star or other unknown sources, with both gravistars and white holes being theoretical, but technically possible. However, they are yet to be proven to exist, so they remain as theories, no matter how likely they are. So now, as you look to the night sky, you will recognize its endless void, accompanied by the dying light of many great balls of flame throughout space. Many of these stars may be dead by now, as even though light travels fastest, it could not surmount the distance of these stars, unable to reach us in an instant. Thus, light from them possibly being from before Earth was any more than a floating rock. This is also how the universe appears to be expanding to us, as the observable universe grows as its light reaches us. Light from the edge was created over 13.6 billion years ago, and is now only reaching us. There are two main studies of this ever-growing abyss that surround our little blue and green ball, those being astronomy and astrology. However, even though some of you may think so, astrology isn't just about star signs and how stars perceive you. It is actually the study of stars as a whole, not just constellations and patterns, but their makeup and creation, as well as their deaths and its effects. Just like what I've talked about, to end this podcast, why not have a little fun fact regarding stars? Did you know, if you look down at your wrist, you can see veins, right? These blue veins. Well, these veins contain hemoglobin, an integral molecule of your respiratory system, because it carries oxygen throughout your body, keeping you alive. Hemoglobin contains a hemoglobin molecule, which has an iron atom at its center. And as discussed earlier, iron is primarily formed via nuclear fusion in stars, and scattered throughout the universe during their destruction, which means that you are currently being kept alive by stardust formed from the death of a star, meaning that a star has died for you, albeit it may have been unknowingly. Well, that will be the end of this podcast. Goodbye.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.